I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm your host, Louis Schackshaft. You can find me on Twitter at Louis Schackshaft, and you can also find the podcast on Twitter at Championship Pod. This episode is part two of our international break special, where we will review the season of Leeds United, Derby County, Bristol City and Sheffield United. So first of all, today we have Paul, who's a Bristol City fan. Hi, Paul, do you want to just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, Louis. Yeah, my name's Paul Binning, Bristol City fan. My Twitter handle is at the Exiled Robin, and I was about to say I write a blog, but that's very rare these days. More Twitter and Facebook activity than actual blogging, but you can find a blog at exiledrobin.blogspot.com.
Brilliant. I mean, I'll just get straight into it, Paul. Basically, we've got a few questions for you today, and it's with the second part of our international break special. We're just having a review of obviously, first of all, Bristol City season. So I'm going to go back 7 or 8 months with yourself. What were your expectations this season? And we're happy to continue with Lee Johnson during this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at the start of the season, I mean, you have to look at last season, I guess, and we had an abysmal run, which has been well documented through sort of November, right through to March, and barely won a game. You know, there was a poll at one point which wanted 95% of the fan base wanted Johnson out. He managed to cling on and the board stuck with him. I think, to be fair, at the start of the season, most fans have kind of got themselves back in a position that, well, we're stuck with him. And, you know, let's see him given a go. We brought in a few summer signings, obviously, like everyone else had. But I think there was always a fear and a worry that it wouldn't take many poor results to, you know, affect him and, you know, start the fans getting on his back again. But, yeah, I think having had a relegation battle, having gone down, obviously, last time we were in a relegation battle and struggled 3 or 4 years in a row in this division, I think anywhere mid-table in a sort of sensible, safe, semi-boring season would have been actually quite an achievement for us, and most fans would have probably been quite happy with that in a sort of funny way. So, yeah, I think that was the case. I said we had a few summer signings, didn't know a lot about all of them, and build on the sort of squad that he was already building on. But I think it's fair to say, with that run of form, there were quite a lot of doubts about quite a lot of sort of key players in the side, and I think we'll come and talk about a couple of them later on. But, you know, there were some doubts around the likes of Flint and Joe Bryan, and we tried Bobby Reid up front in some pre-season friendlies, and he'd start scoring goals in friendlies, but we all thought it was a bit of a balmy move because, you know, he'd never played up front, and he's a little creative midfielder. And I think that, again, that was just waiting to almost go wrong for people to start getting on Johnson's back. And, you know, I guess the rest is history a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you've touched on there. Obviously, Bristol City have had a lot of standout players this season. And, you know, after last season, they lost such as Tammy Abraham. And coming into this season, a few players have obviously filled his boots and probably done even better in some regards. So players such as Bobby Reid and Aidan Flint, you know, they've been spectacular at times this season. Do you fear that if Bristol City were to stay in this division, that they, you know, they may be looking for a move to a so-called bigger club or a lower league Premier League club in the summer?
Yeah, I think the three names in particular are Flint, Joe Bryan and Bobby Reid. Flint actually signed a new contract a couple of months ago, signed until I think it's 2020. So whether that does anything other than whack his price up for us if he does go somewhere, I don't know. But it's a bit of a statement of intent at least. He was, think back to August, I mean, he may or may not have picked up, but he was actually very strongly linked to a move to Birmingham and had Birmingham shelled out an extra little bit of money for him. They'd have probably had him. I think he's probably pretty relieved he dodged a bullet there at the moment. And, you know, he's been in great form this season, attracted a lot of headlines. But you can see why he'd attract a Premier League club, but I think there'd be doubts about him, doubts about his lack of pace, and he gets caught out a fair bit defensively, but he wins 99% of all headers, and he obviously is strong in the box and set pieces for, you know, back, defending and obviously attacking and score some goals. So you can see why he'd attract someone and why someone would take a risk. And I think when you look at the likes of, you know, Harry Maguire and Alfie Mawson, who have come up from this league and established themselves in the Premier League, I think it's a position where clubs are maybe a little bit more willing to take a risk rather than try and buy some, you know, Spanish or Portuguese defender who may not actually cope with a robust nature of a Premier League. Joe Bryan has just been, well, his exceptional performance against Man United in the League Cup was just absolutely top draw. And I think that one game, if nothing else, would have attracted a lot of attention, a lot of scouts. He's strong, he's good in the air, he's good with 2 feet, he can play in 3 or 4 positions. So, you know, he's got a lot of the attributes that a lot of managers would be looking for. And he's 24, I think 25, so he's probably at a good age as well. And then Bobby Reid, similarly, I mean, he's been in and out of side for a few years. He's 25 now, and it's the first season I'd say he's properly established himself. Lee Johnson's always been a fan of his, but to switch him up front is been a bit of a masterstroke. I think what you see in him, and I'm not trying to compare him to these players whatsoever, but there's a bit of a Firmino and a Son of Tottenham about him. He works from the front tremendously hard and creates a lot of space, and he doesn't give defenders any time whatsoever. And I think he'd be a good asset for someone to go in and do that role. And yeah, if he can score 10, 15 goals as well, like he has done this year, then obviously that's a massive added boost. But yeah, and he's probably our hardest working player. I mean, you know, for a striker to have that claim attached to him, obviously is a great attribute that a lot of managers would look at.
I was just going to say, sorry there, Paul, you know, such as Reid and Flint and Bryan, as you're mentioning there, it's not a bad thing, but if they were to move on, you'd expect each player to be worth between 5 to 10 million. Would you agree? Or,
well, I mean, I think it depends on, you know, I mean, I think 10 minimum for any of them, to be honest. I don't think we'd look for any less than that. I mean, Flint, there was talk that Flint would have gone for between 5 and 10 in the summer. I think Birmingham bid 5 million at one point, and we sort of still said no thanks. Reid, you know, and he's kind of scored for 15, 20 goals, but that means he's worth 15 million in this division, because pretty much any other striker who scores that number of goals is worth that amount of money. I think Joe Bryan, similarly, I think he's such a strong player. I mean, we're not as rich as Wolves or Villa, but we have got backing with Steve Lansdowne, and we're certainly not under pressure to sell. So I think it would take, I mean, best estimate, I'd say 10 for Flint and probably 15 for Joe and Bobby to get us around the table. I don't think they'd be interested other than that, unless it was, a big-ish Premier club. And certainly with Joe and Bobby, were both local boys, you know, whether with club just felt they owed it to them to reward their years of service with a chance to have that move.
Yeah, definitely. And they're all relatively young of age, aren't they? So, they've got potential to be worth even more if a Premier League club was to take them on. I know you mentioned the League Cup, and I was going to, you know, that's the next question, basically. Bristol City were, you know, exceptional in the League Cup this season. Do you feel, though, obviously they got to the semi-final and got knocked out by Manchester City, do you feel that hindered their league performance at all, a little? Or?
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, it's almost unavoidable to suggest otherwise, I think, at the moment. The games earlier in the season, less so, obviously. I think they're a bit more few and further between. And, yeah, they're in and out of other international breaks and all the other stuff. But, I mean, certainly in December, we started December and we beat Middlesbrough at home and then Sheffield United away, both games on Sky. And I think at that point, we were up to second and you really thought, this is it. We can actually, we're as good as anyone in this league other than Wolves. And I think you saw that at that point. And I think then we went on a run of, I think it was 9 games in 30 days over the Christmas period, including 3 cup ties against the Manchester sides. And that was 3 games more than any other Championship side played in that period. We play a high-pressing style. Let's talk about Bobby Reid's work rate. You know, that's kind of the same for the wingers. But, you know, we've got wingers who work, Jamie Patterson, you know, worked hard, and Brownhill on the other side. And I think basically we're knackered. I think we got to mid-January and we just got to absolutely knackered. And the run of league games in that period as well was big games. You know, we had Wolves at home day before New Year's Eve, when we went to Villa, and, you know, two games in 3 days there. And, you know, I don't think it's the wheels coming off. I think it was just there was a period where we were really, really struggling. We've kind of just about started to settle back. We had a good win against Fulham, a good win against Sheffield Wednesday, beat Ipswich last weekend. So there's a bit of form coming back. But there are certainly games we've seen recently, especially away from home, where we're just really struggling to get going. And say the style is a particular style. And I think if, you know, we're not the most talented team in the division, but our work rate and our pressing style has caused almost every other team issues at some point. But you can't do that if everyone's knackered. And adding to that, I think it's the physio was on our website last week saying we've had 10 operations on the squad this year. And he's, you know, he's used to 3 or 4 in a season. We've had 10. Yeah. And 6 players who you'd certainly expect to be in and around the first 11 on a regular basis have been out for a period of 3 months or more. And that obviously has an issue as well, because you just can't change it up. You know, especially in that December, January period, you're all tired and everyone could do a rest, but you just had no one to bring in other than younger players and people who you couldn't sort of guarantee would put in a solid 6, 7 out of 10 performance. So it meant the same players playing week in, week out, and very little chance to have a rest. I know Sheffield Wednesday in the same position, or have had a lot of similar issues this year. But
yeah, definitely, yeah, we have. You know, it's I don't think even with our better players we'd have been doing exceptionally well this season. Anyway, we've just had one of them seasons. But yeah, it's a shame because obviously Bristol City were flying, and you know they had a bit of a dip in form. Besides that, though, Paul, what are your expectations for the remainder of this season, and do you think Bristol City can still obviously get in the playoffs and potentially go up? Is, you know, have you got high expectations for that to happen? Or
I think we're now one of those teams, we still got a chance. I've heard lots of talk in the last few weeks about, oh, we're out of a race. Well, we're obviously not out of a race. We're 3 points off it, and we've still got to play Middlesbrough and, you know, teams like that. So we're also not out of a race. But we started to seem to have gotten a habit of winning our home games and losing our away games, which is kind of okay, but you've got to sort of make sure you pick up something away from home at some point. And I think that's the issue we've got. But yeah, we're 1 point off, 8 games to go. You've got to be looking at it and say, if you can pick up 16, 17 points, especially obviously in those key matches against the teams around you, then you've got a chance. So definitely got a chance. I think in the playoffs, I don't fancy our chance against Villa just because they smashed us earlier in the season, and they obviously got, you know, a lot of good players there. But we've beaten all the other sides out there. We've given each of them a game, and you know, I think we'd fancy our chances certainly in a two-legged appearance. Unfortunately, our historical playoff record is absolutely dreadful, so we've never actually gone up through a playoff. So we've had it must be 5, maybe 6 attempts now over the last 30 years and never actually managed it. So I don't think if we got in the playoffs, there'd be too many holding their breath for a, you know, to actually be the ones going up at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, as I know, as a Wednesday fan, you know, the playoffs are a lottery, and, you know, I hope that you get that 6th spot for yourself, and, you know, but from then on in, anybody can win it. But final quick question to put you on the spot, Paul. I want one word answer, and the question is, predict a playoff winner. Who do you think will do it this year?
I think I'll go for Villa.
Villa, fair enough. We're going to see what the other guys say later on in the podcast. But with that, we're out of time, Paul, for this segment. So I want to thank you for joining us. And do you just want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, thanks, Lewis. Thanks. Great. So I'm at TheExiledRobin on Twitter, or exiledrobin.blogspot.com if you want to read a very out-of-date blog.
So now I want to welcome Kevin, who is a Leeds United fan. Do you just want to introduce yourself, Kevin, and tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, my name's Kevin Markey. I'm the editor of Leeds United Mad, an independent website on Leeds, of course. And my Twitter handle is Leeds_Mad, and you can follow me on there, where I obviously report on everything Leeds United.
So we're going to get straight into it, Kev. I've got a few questions for you, basically reviewing Leeds this season. So first of all, if we go back in time before the season began, how did you see the campaign panning out, and where did you expect to finish this season?
Well, obviously, I was under the impression that the season would have started under Gary Monk again, because he had such a great season last season, nearly getting us to the playoffs. So when he left and took his backroom staff with him, Pep Clotet, James Beattie and everybody else, And then we lost Chris Wood just as the season had started, basically, and Charlie Taylor, two of our most influential players from last season. Then we lost Liam Bridcutt as well. Carl Bartley went back to Swansea. So and Rob Green was obviously told he was no longer required. So we lost the massive spine of the team, really. So when we announced a new manager in Thomas Christensen, I didn't really expect to do any better than seventh, to be honest with you. I thought we would be very mid-table with the new players that we'd brought in. And that's the way it seems to be panning out now, because even though we did get off to an excellent start, obviously that sort of went a bit sour a couple of times this season. Mm-hmm. And obviously it led to his sacking in January, February as well. So overall, I didn't expect us to do as well as we did last season. Obviously, you hope to do as well, because we did sort of nearly get into the playoffs. But with the new regime and the new ownership and the new players that were brought in, I honestly didn't expect us to get anything higher than maybe top 10, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you mentioned Christiansen there. The next question I wanted to ask, basically, and you also mentioned the dip in form, I think one was just before Christmas and then maybe again around February, March time, but they had obviously a couple of dips in form under Christiansen. Did you think, though, Leeds United were right to sack him? What were your thoughts on that at the time?
Yeah, obviously he brought in his own players, he was helped to bring them in, basically. I don't know if he had a huge say in who he got in, or whether it was the director of football, Victor Arthur, was organising all the players. But obviously, you had the impression that he had some sort of say in who was coming in. But I did honestly think it would take him time to settle into the sort of English football, if you like, because he was only used to managing clubs in Cyprus, which is a very minor league, even though he did work very well in getting his side into the, I think it was the Europa League last 16, which is a fantastic achievement for a team from Cyprus. So his pedigree, managerial-wise, wasn't fantastic as such, but it was okay. Even though his playing career, he obviously played in the Bundesliga, obviously, and he was top scorer there for a season. And obviously, he played for Spain a couple of times. So his pedigree, and he had a Barcelona background, so his pedigree as a player was excellent. I just think it needed a bit of time, really, in English football for him to sort of adapt to the sort of football he wasn't used to. And I honestly think he should have been given at least till the end of the season, and then it could have been reviewed in the summer whether they were going to continue with him or maybe try a different angle altogether. So I think it was harsh that he'd lost the job the way he did. And I think he did deserve a longer, at least until the end of the season, to be fair.
All right, it's interesting you said that, because from my perspective, I know I'm not obviously a Leeds fan, but I completely agree with what you said. I thought Christiansen, yes, he had a couple of dips in form with Leeds, and I thought they could have given him till end of the season. It's not like they were in a relegation battle or even really in the bottom half of the table. So for me, it'd have been nice to see him given till end of the season, because I'm not one for teams just sacking managers willy-nilly, and Leeds United seem to be doing that. But I don't want to embarrass you, but I couldn't not do this podcast without bringing it up. Can you update us on, obviously, there was all this the embarrassment of the club badge situation. What is the update on that badge?
Obviously, the club decided to delay it because all the sort of comments they got, like awful, shocking, horrendous, when they did avail a new badge in January, obviously they had to sort of take another look at it, because over 77,000 people or fans signed a petition asking the owner to stop the launch of the original design. So something had to be done. Obviously they jumped in with 2 feet there, thinking, oh yeah, the fans will accept this. It's a new badge, a new era. But when you looked at it was dreadful, basically. And even opposing fans were mocking it, really. And since then, obviously they put a delay on it till next season. That's when the, obviously, centenary season will be 1919 to 2019. And they've had about 1,200 ideas, like you would, from the supporters. So I think they've got plenty of ideas now on how they should get it right. hopefully for next season. And when they look at all the ideas from the supporters, like you say, 1,200 ideas, I'm sure they'll make the right decision this time and put it to some sort of forum this time where fans can actually pick which one they actually like. So, yeah, after a dreadful decision, I think they've decided to do the right thing, and hopefully the right design will come out for the centenary year next year.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, I think in the long run it'll probably work out for the best. It was just a shame they didn't get it right the first time, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
But obviously more recently, Leeds United appointed Heckingbottom from Barnsley. Mm-hmm. Were you happy with this appointment, and how do you expect the remainder of the season to pan out, and where will Leeds United finish?
Yeah, well, obviously it was not an expected decision, because I don't think Heckingbottom would have been everybody's choice, because obviously he's been struggling a little bit this season with Barnsley, even though he's done a fantastic job there, don't get me wrong. He's got them promoted and everything, and everybody seems to respect him as a coach. But at the end of the day, he was coming from a team that had only won about 6 games all season, coming to a team that had forgotten how to win as well. So I don't think he's bought in a losing mentality into a team that needed somebody a bit more positive, I suppose, somebody who was doing quite well. But, I mean, the jury's still out on him. Obviously, you've got to give him a bit of time. He's had 8 games so far, and he's only won 1 game so far. So he's got a lot to do, yeah. There's 8 games to go. Hopefully, we can finish the season on a bit of a high and get a few more victories. But I think it depends, really, on in the summer again. Will he be able to bring in his own players, or will the director of football, Victor Orta, have a big say on what will be happening again? So it's going to be a big summer for Leeds United this summer. We don't want to be changing managers willy-nilly, left, right and centre like we did under Cellino. I think Radu Zidane is a different owner altogether, and I don't think he'll be chopping and changing. I don't think he really wanted to sack Chris, isn't it? Just that he didn't seem to have much choice with the form that we were under at the time. So I think the jury is still out on Heckingbottom at the moment, but hopefully if he gets the right players in the summer and we finish the season on a bit of a high, I think, you know, you got to give the guy a chance.
Yeah, definitely. I've got to agree with you there, Kev. I think that, you know, Heckingbottom's got credentials. Obviously, he did well at Barnsley, and I think he's just got to be given time. It's simple as that. Like you say, He's got a summer transfer window coming up. Hopefully, get rid of the deadwood and bring in the players he wants, and then judge him next season. You know, next Christmas or next March even. But so hopefully things work out for him. But I'm going to put you on the spot now, Kev. One final question.
Yeah.
One word answer. I just want you to predict a playoff winner.
The playoff winner.
Yeah.
Okay. Aston Villa.
Oh, you're second person to say that tonight. So we've got 2 to Villa so far. So we'll see what the remaining people say. But thank you for joining us, Kev. Do you just want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, like I said before, it's Twitter handle LeedsUnited_Mad, website LeedsUnitedMad, independent website for Leeds United, where you can say anything you like about the club. And hopefully we'll finish the season on a high with 8 games to go.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now I just want to welcome Andy, who's a Derby County fan. Do you just want to introduce yourself and tell our listeners where they can find you?
Hi, I'm Andy Buckley-Taylor, Derby County supporter. You can find me at Twitter with the user handle @BuckTaylor64. And I also blog for the Derbyshire Times group of newspapers.
Right, first of all, Andy, I just want to take you back to pre-season. I noticed, obviously, Derby brought in a couple of experienced players prior to the season commencing, and because of that, what were your expectations prior to the season starting?
Gary Rowett came in for the last nine games of last season, we knew that style of football would change. And he brought in Tom Huddleston and Curtis Davies from Hull City. And it's difficult to know exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
But my own hopes were for a solid top 10 finish. And I believe that Gary Rowett would need 2 to 3 transfer windows to build a side that would play to his style of football. So far, we've surpassed what I expected us to achieve. I think adding a few more experienced players in the team has actually been a positive overall. You can't beat a bit of knowledge, a bit of experience. Some players who have been in the position before of being promoted. And it's just getting the blend of experience with youth and ambition right. And if you achieve that, you know, you're in with a very good chance of success.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned finishing in the top 10, and Derby is certainly on track to do so, even better than that. Now, Derby have gone under the radar a little in the chase for promotion. I know they've dropped off a little, but can you see considerable improvements under Rowett compared to the McLaren days?
Yeah, I can, because under Steve McLaren, we played nice, attractive, passing football. But certain teams, after a certain period, teams have gotten wise to this and they're just set up to, beat that sort of tactic where they would park the bus or hit us on the counter-attack. With Gary Rowett, we can play an attacking football, but we're also good on the counter. There's more than one particular style to how he plays, and apart from, you know, we've had a few impressive victories, like we've had a couple of 3-0 away wins, Hull City 5-0 at home, where, you know, it was quite pretty to watch. But we've also got the ability to dig deep and win ugly where possible, and such is the nature of the Championship, you need more than one way to win a match. And I think Rowett's style of football is probably more suited to the Championship than that of Steve McLaren. And he usually, you know, does his homework on the opposition, and he will set up to exploit any weaknesses that he thinks that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with Derby County this season. I've watched a lot of their games, and, you know, they play some really good attacking football under Rowett, which, like I say, that impresses me. But one of your star performers this season, if I can say it, is Vidra. Obviously, the joint league top scorer with Bobby Reid. How come there's been such an improvement dramatically this season with Vidra? And because of his improvement, do you fear he may leave in the summer, possibly?
Excuse me. I think it's quite simple, really, why he's doing so well this season is he's been played in the correct role. When he was at Watford, he was playing off Troy Deeney, but you take him to West Brom or his spell at Reading, where he was struggling to score, he was either being played as a lone striker or out wide, and he's just not that sort of player. You're playing behind the striker, and that's the role he was successful in before, and that's what he's done at Derby, apart from obviously under Nigel Pearson and Steve McLaren, who didn't play him in that role. Gary Rowett came in, he played Vidra behind the number 9 position, and he's done really well in that. And apart from being, you know, joint top scorer in the division, His other work, when he's not scoring, has been very impressive as well. He links up with a number 9. Vidra is more of a number 10 striker, and he lines up behind our striker, and that's the strength he has. If you play a player to his strengths, it's obviously going to work better. As regard to will he go in the summer, I don't think so. You know, I think he's happy now. He's playing well in a team that can complement his style of football. Mm-hmm. And but you know, obviously, if somebody came in with a stupid money offer, then yeah, you know, you know the old saying: every player has his price. But I mean, hopefully, he will stay and he will kick on and build on what he's achieved so far.
Yeah, and again, I think it all boils down to with Vidra how well Derby's remainder of the season does go, and you know what you do in the playoffs if you get there, and you should get there. Quick question though as well. Obviously Sam Winnall, I'm a Wednesday fan, so I've got to ask this question, and I know he's injured and he's out for the remainder of the season, but do you expect Derby to bid for him in the summer?
I think there'll be interest. He wasn't starting week in, week out, but you could see what he was actually bringing to the team.
Yeah.
He's a sort of player, when he comes on, he does dominate in the opposition penalty area, and he's good in the air. And I actually think, had he not got injured, that Rowett wouldn't have signed Cameron Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
If we are still in the Championship next season, I expect that Gary Rowett will possibly make a move for him. In this short period that he's been with us, he's become very popular with the crowd. But at the end of the day, it's if Sheffield Wednesday are, you know, willing to let him go, what sort of money they would want for him, because, you know, I think it's very difficult to put a price on him.
Yeah.
It's all ifs and ands, isn't it? So,
yeah, you know. I'm a fan of Winnall, and we only paid £500,000 for him. We stole him from Barnsley, really, and he's obviously, you know, it's difficult to say, put a price on him, because obviously he's injured at the minute. But when he has played, he managed to score goals, and he is impressive. And you know, if I have a feeling, obviously Wednesday probably will want to sell him in the summer, but if they were to do so, they'd probably want somewhere between £3 and £4 million for him would probably make sense. It's whether Derby are willing to pay that. But like you said, also the bought-in such as Jerome. Regarding Derby, though, they're currently fifth in the league, Andy. How do you see the remainder of the season going? And can Derby reach the Premier League via the playoffs this term, do you think?
I think any team that reaches a playoffs has got a good chance of going up. It's a lottery. If you go back to last season, Sheffield Wednesday and Fulham were the teams that everybody was predicting,
yeah,
that would be the two to watch in the playoffs, and it didn't work out like that. And I think you've got to bear that in mind. You know, often in the playoffs, what you expect to happen, the teams that you expect to go to Wembley, you know, it often doesn't happen. I think 13 points is possibly enough to guarantee a playoff spot. I think 15 would certainly be, 15 will get you there. Looking through the fixtures of all the teams that are in the top six or just below it, and they've all got some difficult fixtures against each other. Nearly all of ours are against a top six or a top six chasing side, or teams, you know, we've got a couple of games against teams that need to win because they're in a relegation battle.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we do make it, we're going to deserve to be there. I can see 15 points there for us without sounding big-headed. But looking at it overall, and I think if we are in the playoffs, I don't think teams will want to play us. I know Fulham are possibly the best side on current form in the Championship, but when you've got, like, well, it's a mini cup competition, so if you consider the fact that apart from Wolves, we've kept the most clean sheets in the division all season. We're not bad on the goal scoring side either, so I don't think anyone will want to play us, and I think we'll have as good a chance as any of making the progress.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's some real strong teams, obviously, in the playoffs at the minute, and I expect most of those teams to stay where they are, and it's going to be tough, and like you say, it is a lottery. But I'm going to put you on the spot now, Andy. I want a one-word answer, and I want you to predict a playoff winner this season.
Well, I won't predict us. I'll never predict my own team. Yeah, I'm saying Fulham.
Your first person to say Fulham. Two previously have said Aston Villa, so it's going to be interesting. Obviously, I think Villa and Fulham are probably two of the strongest based on form. I know Villa had a little dip, but, you know, the players that they've got, they'll definitely be one of the favourites. But obviously, good luck to Derby. And thank you for joining us, Andy. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yeah, BookTaylor64 is my Twitter handle. And you can find me on the various Derbyshire local newspaper websites, where I have a weekly blog bringing you my views from Pride Park.
Now we want to welcome Lewis Hobbs, who is a Sheffield United fan. Do you just want to introduce yourself, mate, and tell all the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, hi. So I'm Lewis Hobbs. I represent Sheffield United on the podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at @LH9_.
Right, first question, mate. So after last season's successful promotion campaign, what were your expectations this season, and, you know, where did you think Sheffield United would finish?
Yeah, so it's a weird one going into this, because obviously we've coming off 6 years in the League One, which felt like forever. I think most players will agree with me that we thought we were never going to get out of that division.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, with Wilder coming in, we got a real refreshment of football, nice attacking, fast-paced football, and dominating the division as we did. I did go into the Championship quite positive, because as we've seen previously, a lot of teams that do go up from the League One to the Championship on a high note have that momentum behind them. We've seen, like, Wolves a couple of years ago when they first came up. I think they just narrowly finished out of the top six, and how many teams in the past decade have gone on to do double promotions. So it wouldn't have been the weirdest thing to happen. And obviously it has happened, fortunately for us. But me going into the season, I predicted myself that anything really above 16th, and I would be amazed by, really happy with, because after having 6 years of hell, is what it was like, it's just an achievement to stay in this division, and it's good that we've done that.
Yeah, a lot of people have obviously been probably surprised by how well Sheffield United have done this season and where they are in the league. And not only that, a lot of Sheffield United players have proved themselves at this level this season. Do you fear, though, because of that, any players might leave in the summer?
Yeah, definitely. We've got a really good squad of players. We've got some young players. Obviously, the obvious one that everyone seems to have been talking about all season is David Brooks. Despite him probably not being our best player by a long shot this year, mainly due to him being injured for quite a substantial amount of time, but when he has come on off the bench, or when he started, like against Wednesday, He lights the team, and he's that spark, and he looks a special player. And in the future, he is going to be a Premier League talent. There's no two ways about it. Whether we can keep him another year, because obviously in January there was like 10 to 15 million price tags on him. And with him already being capped for the Wales National Senior Team, who knows how far he can progress. So hopefully we can keep him, because he hasn't really got into that first team sheet with the likes of Mark Duffy, an aging player, but he's been really highly performing. So he hasn't really been able to get that first team claim, which next season, if we can keep him, I presume he will be having that. He'll be that first name on the team sheet. But we don't know whether we'll be able to keep him. And if a team like Liverpool, Everton, Spurs, who have been linked with him, do offer that £15 million, the club's not in the right state to turn that down, really. Other players, such as John Fleck, I think he's relatively underrated because you don't really see many other fans other than Blades saying how good he is. Yeah. For me, he's one of the most complete midfielders in the division. He can defend, he can pick up the ball from the back, lead it to attacks. Like we saw last season, he was a top assister in the league. He got the player of the season in the League One. And after we lost Paul Coutts, he's really had to pick up our midfield on his own. And when he's been on his day, when he's been sparking, we've gone on and won the game. And he's only 24, 25, young Scottish midfielder. So the likes, your lower-end Premier League teams, I presume, if they drop a couple million for him, we're not going to be keeping him. And another player is Jack O'Connell. He doesn't really seem to be that many English centre-halves knocking about these days. I know there's the likes of Mawson, Tarkowski, but Jack O'Connell, for me, in the Championship, is probably the best English young centre-half. And he's got everything, really. He's complete. He's 6'100", big man, really composed on the ball. And you've seen watching Sheffield United this season, his confidence of picking that ball up, charging down the left wing, swinging a ball in. He's a real asset to our team. And I think if we lose him, he'll be one of the biggest losses, because our back three may be collapsed without him, because he really is that spark and he's a leader in that team.
Yeah, I'm going to mention there, you've mentioned a few players, obviously, with, you know, age on their side as well. If some of these players were to leave, do you expect to definitely get a few quid for them, you know, for £5-6 million a piece? I mean, like you mentioned, Brooks there, £15 million. Would that mean, if Sheffield United were to miss out this season on the playoffs, for example, with money coming in like that, do you think they could be stronger next season, or how would you see that panning out?
Well, if we do sell our players, which we have been known for over the 6 years in League One, our fans have been sick of it. We've been stigmatised as a selling club because the likes of Kyle Walker, Kyle Norton, Harry Maguire, all, don't get me wrong, all top English players, but
yeah,
at the time when we sold them, not as good as what they are now. And we couldn't keep hold of them. And after getting a couple million for each, we never really got that money reinvested, even with the likes of Shea Adams, who went to Birmingham, Jamie Murphy, who went to Brighton. It was a reoccurring theme at Bramall Lane that every season we'd narrowly miss out on getting promoted, and then we'd sell our best player and bring in someone not as good. So if that happens, which I dread to think, I don't think it will. McCabe's really sorted himself out, and there is obviously the discussion of whether Prince Abdullah is going to buy the club fully off McCabe, which we'll have to wait and see. But more often than not, as we've seen this year with the likes of Reading, the teams that just narrowly miss out, and likes of Wednesday, if you narrowly miss out, it's the season after is really, really tough to get the same momentum behind you and push forward. So I personally, I'm not really looking forward to next season if we don't get to keep these players and we don't strengthen the squad as a whole, because as you've seen, it's really hard falling back and trying to push for the playoffs the season after.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like you've just mentioned there, from my perspective, it can knock you for six missing out on the playoffs, or falling short in the playoffs, should I say. But this remainder of this season, do you still feel as though Sheffield United can get in the playoffs still?
Well, yeah, I do. I think we've still got a tough run of games. We've still got Cardiff, Preston, Middlesbrough and Bristol all to play. So it's in our hands.
Yeah.
If we can go and get results from these games, we will finish in the top six. And as you've seen throughout the season, we've played some really nice, attractive football. But it's just been those bad days out, like Hull, where we've come up shorted. It's just not looked like the same footballers. It's not looked like the same 11 footballers that played the week before. So if we can play like we have from the first start of the season, where you think back, like we left November at Elland Road, top of the table, that seems like years ago now, us dropping out of form. But if we can push forward, personally, I don't think we will, unfortunately. I think our losing Paul Coutts were massive, and you've heard me say it on the podcast God knows how many times, I'm like a broken record, but Paul Coutts and John Fleck were the cogs, and John Fleck on his own in the midfield, just he does his job, but the person at the side of him doesn't really seem to be doing his job. As good as Lee Evans and John Lundstram have been it on occasion, they just don't seem to make the team gel as much as what Coutts did. So we can, like I said, but I do think we'll narrowly miss out.
Yeah, it's tough at the minute. I know there's a lot of strong clubs, you know, the ones that are sat in the playoff spots at the minute, they've all got credentials to be in the Premier League, and we've touched on that earlier. But as well as the players obviously proving themselves this season, Lewis, Wilder has proved himself as a manager also at this level. Do you expect a few clubs, maybe a lower league Premier League team or a bigger Championship team trying to poach such as Wilder over the course of the summer? Or
yeah, definitely. I think clubs like your likes of Everton who fold out this season, and teams that might narrowly miss out, they'd be stupid not to give him a ring and see if he'll come, because as we haven't just seen for this season, but past three seasons, dominated the League Two with Northampton, came straight to us, dominated the League One, and his first season as a manager in the Championship. And let's be real, on paper, he's got a team which shouldn't be anywhere near top half Championship, and he's got them playing, got the likes of Leon Clark scoring 15 goals a season. So definitely, I think, well, and if you look back at January when Everton was linked with Sean Dyche, Chris Wilder was linked with the Burnley job. If that was to happen, would Wilder be able to turn down the money? Because I don't think we'd be able to offer him. He has been tied down to, I think, a 4-year deal. So we have got that on our side. But as much as he is a lifelong Blade, loves the club, would die for the club, would it be worth staying if you can get that Premier League move and you can get the big bucks?
Yeah, I think you're right. I can definitely see, obviously, a team like, you know, West Brom or Stoke or Burnley, like you mentioned, you know, teams like that. I can see Wilder definitely be linked. I don't know whether, you know, he'd make the move. And I know, like you say, he's a United fan, but I'm sure he'd be up there with one of the favourites to go to a team like that. Like you say, at the Premier League move, you can't always turn that down. But I'm going to put you on the spot now, Lewis. One final question. I just want you to predict, if you can, a playoff winner this season.
Fulham for me.
Okay, yeah. That's funny because we've gone through it. We've had two who've said Aston Villa, and we've had two now who've said Fulham. So it's interesting. And if I were choosing, I'd probably go for Fulham also. Yeah. But thank you for joining us, Lewis. Do you just want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Yes, so you can follow me on Twitter @_LH9_.
And I've been your host also. My name is Lewis Shackshaft. I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan. You can find me on Twitter @LewisShackshaft or visit my website, which is lewisshackshaft.com, where there's all my articles and blogs and Sheffield Wednesday statistics on there. But just want to thank all the listeners for listening. Check out our Twitter page @ChampionshipPod, where we regularly post updates and polls and obviously keep you updated with all the latest shows. So check that out. Thanks again for listening.